You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Noon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB. This is Don Guerra.
And I'm Erin Wagermiller. This is the Daily Local News for Tuesday, October 31st, 2017. Happy Halloween!
We all agree that we're just going to listen to that person, and it's unacceptable to speak while they're speaking. And so it's this beautiful thing that can take place when we make that sort of contract.
Coming up on today's Community Report, WFHB correspondent Jada Lucas speaks with the producers of the Ivy Tech John Waldron Art Center storytelling series, which highlights the stories of immigrants and refugees in Bloomington.
Also coming up in the next hour, Elizabeth Rue is the proprietor of Personal Financial Services, a company that can be appointed as the financial and welfare guardian for the disabled. That story coming up on Everyday People, a weekly segment aimed at improving the lives of older adults and people with disabilities in Monroe County. But first, these local headlines.
The City of Bloomington Police Department is investigating four instances of so-called hate-based graffiti since Friday. A city press release stated that the latest instance, a spray-painted swastika found on 14th and College Underpass afternoon yesterday, has already been painted over. BPD Chief Mike Dekoff says the department is investigating the instances and is encouraging people to call in if they see any additional swastika graffiti.
For the last several days, we have received a few reports of swastikas being spray-painted in different places around the community. We are investigating those. We ask that if anyone sees any of those, to report those. The city Public Works Department is quickly getting out and painting over those symbols so that it's not out there. But the main thing is if the community sees those things out there, that they report them so that we can investigate and so that we can get those things covered up.
Last year, an investigation into a swastika spray painted on a Brown County church revealed that the perpetrator was the church's organist, who identified himself as gay. Dekoff says his department is taking the current Bloomington investigation seriously.
This is the type of thing that we try to monitor the different hate groups that might be in the area and what they're doing. We haven't seen anything where anyone has taken responsibility for it. So we, like I said, we continue to look into them and encourage the community, if they see them, to report them.
The city's press release stated it was currently unknown if the graffiti incidents were related. Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton was quoted in the release saying, quote, "These acts of hate do not represent the culture and values of Bloomington. Every person is welcome here. Messages of hate are not. We will aggressively pursue every avenue open to us to find the person or persons who are responsible for this, and they will be held accountable," unquote. Dekoff was also recently appointed to the Integrated Public Safety Commission by Governor Eric Holcomb. The commission is responsible for coordinating emergency responses to public safety cries. Dekoff says his appointment will not interfere with his duties as Bloomington Police Department chief.
The former reservoir, Weimer Lake, in Bloomington is scheduled to be demolished. The City of Bloomington's Utilities Department is currently taking bids from companies to remove the 20-foot-high, 200-foot-long dam in the city's southwest. Weimer Lake is situated in Wapahani Mountain Bike Park, on the east side of Highway 37. The dammed reservoir was built in the early 1900s and is approaching the end of what Utilities Department staffers consider its lifespan. The project is expected to cost $500,000 and will begin next year. Current proposals for the area will significantly reduce the marine space occupied by the dam, replacing it with planted vegetation. The city of Bloomington currently draws water from the Lake Monroe Reservoir.
Indiana Secretary of State Connie Lawson is facing another lawsuit over the state's continued voter roll purges. Lawson is listed as a defendant in a federal injunction request filed Friday by a group called Common Cause Indiana. The Indiana Secretary of State is facing a similar lawsuit brought forward by the Indiana chapter of the NAACP. At the center of both lawsuits is Indiana's Interstate Voter Registration Crosscheck, a program which removes voters from voter registrations by comparing first names, last names, and dates of birth with other states' voter rolls. Both Common Cause Indiana and the Indiana chapter of the NAACP allege that the cross-check program violates voters' rights and disproportionately targets minorities whom, the lawsuit alleged, are more likely to have the same first and last names.
The City of Bloomington Utilities Service Board is proposing increasing some of its non-recurring water and sewer charges. The rate changes are based on a report from utilities consultants Crowe Horwath. In the board's meeting last night, City Attorney Chris Wheeler said some of the money raised from the increases will be used for facilities improvements and expansions. Other rate increases, Wheeler says, are just the cost of doing business.
What we are attempting to accomplish is to adjust the rates according to the Crowe-Horwath report that was presented to the board, showing what the actual costs are for the utility to provide the services in most cases, and to adjust them appropriately so that the utility is receiving proper compensation to cover those costs of providing those services.
The Utilities Service Board approved an amendment to Bloomington's water ordinance, increasing several one-time water fees, such as new connection fees, water testing fees, service charges, and security deposits. The water installation charge currently ranges between $770 to $850. That charge could go up to between $1,300 and $1,500. Michelle Walden is the Utility Department's Interim Assistant Director of Finance. She says new connection fee for sewer service will also go up.
Right now it is $1,000 for our normal residential sizes, and it's going up to $2,775.
Walden says a new one-time charge would also be assessed of new customers on top of the new connection fee.
This is a way for us to actually pass the charges along to those that are causing us to need for increased capacity. So people that actually are new hook-ons will be paying this fee, and then we put that money back into a separate reserve, and we'll use that to actually go toward improvements for the plant, whether it be water or our wastewater plants.
Charges for commercial uses could run more than $710,000 for high-income users. Walden says charges for service calls to turn water off or on will also go up. The charge for calls during normal business hours will go from $18 to $45. For the charge for an after-hours call would rise to $171. In the Utilities Service Board meeting, Board Vice President Jim Sherman told Kelson he hopes he will impress upon the council the need for the increases.
I just think it's important to realize that when push comes to shove on the wastewater side and we're going to need a big output of dollars, if that doesn't come from these increases, then it's going to come with increased rates for everyone.
Wheeler says the City Council will hold a public hearing on the proposed rate changes in its November 8th meeting. The Bloomington Utilities Service Board also heard an update on the mold remediation effort at the city's Blucher Pool plant. Last month, the board approved an emergency contract with Fields Environmental to begin remediation efforts after extensive mold was discovered in the plant's ductwork and ventilation systems. The board extended the remediation contract since Field Environmental has discovered more mold at the plant. Board President Sam Frank says rehabilitating the facility means putting in new ductwork.
That's when they got in there to do the remediation, they found that they were so bad it would be easier just to replace the ductwork, and that's what we're trying to do now, which is, in a way, it's better. It's more expensive, but we know that it's going to be cleaned up. Pretty confident that things will be settled down.
The board also approved a $27,000 contract presented by purchasing manager Cindy Shaw for the installation of new heating and air conditioning system.
There was a heater, some registers and grills which were covered in mold, and just restoring the original framework for the HVAC system after it's removed.
Frank says the city is exploring how to best keep the new ductwork clean in order to avoid future mold problems. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Don Guerra.
And I'm Erin Wagermiller. The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
This is Jada Lucas with WFHB. November 3rd, Ivy Tech will host its first ever storytelling series. According to the series description, this series details the experiences of immigrants, refugees, and asylum seekers in the local community. The series is created by Aubrey Cedar. I had the opportunity to speak with Cedar, Paul Daly, the producer and director at Ivy Tech, Kate Brown, an actress in the series, and Willie Palermo, a local poet who is also performing in the series, what they hope it will bring to the community of Bloomington. Cedar speaks first, followed by Paul, Kate, and Willie. So what was the motivation behind creating or being involved in this series?
So a while ago, Bloomington United, which was a group that had happened back in the 80s in Bloomington to support local groups of people who felt disenfranchised, it reignited because of some events happening around the country. And we got together a lot of groups in Bloomington that work to preserve the human rights of people in town, groups that are still underrepresented. And so we had a lot of groups come together, groups like the local NAACP chapter and Volunteers in Medicine and immigrant service groups like Bloomington Refugee Support Network. And we talked about what we could do in order to help support different communities in the community that felt sort of disenfranchised, especially by the new presidency. And one of the things that me and some of my friends there were proposing was that we do a storytelling event, because I'm a huge fan of the Moth podcast and of all of the Moth story slams that go on around the country. And I really am also a theater person. And so I really love and believe in the power of story and the power of hearing people's true stories, how it illuminates for people what really goes on in other people's lives. And it also seemed to be something where you were teaching people about other people's experiences without preaching to them or telling them what they should think. So that was my inspiration for creating it, but Bloomington United didn't have the infrastructure to do it. And so I've known Paul Daly for a while. We did the first production we've ever done together was in 2013. And so I thought, oh, maybe Paul would like this. And so I went and I pitched it to him. And then we went from there.
You're part of the directing process as well, correct?
No, I haven't been involved with the directing much. I'm really there as a producer to make sure it moves along on time schedule and budget.
Mm-hmm. And what made you feel as though that you wanted to produce this series?
You know, Aubrey approached me at a good time. It is something that I strongly believe we need to be doing more of in our society. We need to be listening to each other. And I think for whatever reason right now, we're having a hard time hearing one another. And I've experienced that in my personal life. You know, I've got a friend that I've been friends with now for 24 years, and he and I are very much in conflict about the direction we think the country should be moving. And the most frightening aspect of that, because you're always going to have these differences about what we do to move forward in a good way, the frightening part is that we can't even listen to one another anymore. That it's become reduced to these ideas of you know, fake news, where facts don't even exist. And there's a real problem when you can't even agree on the basic facts of what's happening. And so this idea of getting people in a room and simply telling their life experiences and hearing that, I thought was vital for what we need across the country, and I can't really do that across the country, but I can do it here.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I was interested in jumping on board with Aubrey's idea.
Phil, how do you feel artistic expression can lend itself to bridging those divides in community?
Well, performance is empathy. You can't tell a story, you can't memorize a story without relating to that story. And there's also the audience aspect of hearing a story. You can't hear a story without being affected by that story. And so that's, I think, what makes this kind of approach important.
I think that, because I ask myself that question a lot about, you know, why, like, what do I want to come from this, and why do I think that storytelling is, like, the best way to tell these stories? What I see from storytelling is that it's one of the only times, because around the dinner table, you know, you're talking about politics, you're talking about experiences, and, you know, you talk over each other, or you're listening to the person only as far as then you can make your next point. But when you sit down in an audience and the lights go down on you and lights come up on someone else, we all agree that we're just going to listen to that person, and it's unacceptable to speak while they're speaking. And so it's this beautiful thing that can take place when we make that sort of contract, which everybody understands immediately when they walk into the theater, that that's the contract, that you don't speak during a performance like that. But I think what I told Paul in the beginning was that what I want people to do is come in with an opinion and leave not being able to choose an opinion.
I have a few more years of producing experience, so occasionally I have thoughts and ideas that may help guide her. But this has been a wonderful job done by Aubrey.
I agree. And I just have to show up for rehearsal.
What is it like for you kind of how do you put yourself in the shoes of the person who you're representing, their story?
The person that I'm portraying is dead. She was a Holocaust survivor. I have read a lot about the Holocaust, about the war, World War II, Hitler. I have a knowledge of that particular period. But her words are enough right there. I mean, I'm just using her words, and it's her story, and I'm just proud to be able to retell it.
I'm going to be performing two pieces. The first one is a piece about my mother's journey crossing the border. Second is a piece about basically my relationship with English and Spanish and language growing up, the difficulty to learn Spanish, and my growing relationship with falling in love with English, even though I had, like, challenges identifying with it to begin with.
What inspired you to get involved in this project?
Aubrey reached out to me and mentioned a contact at Volunteers for America. Mentioned a contact for Volunteers of Medicine. Mm-hmm. Volunteers of Medicine is one of the best groups in Bloomington as far as supporting the immigrant community. So once I saw that, I was like, I definitely want to be involved. And I saw the script and saw how empowering it was and how many different groups were involved, and definitely wanted to take advantage of the chance to reach different audiences as well as to be back in a performing space like a theater. I've really missed the sort of energy you can create in that space, and especially to transform people and help them open themselves up to new perspectives. A lot of people, like, what artistic expression allows people to do is understand the human aspect of things. You can study a lot about the policy, how the laws affect things, but what the art allows you to understand is how this affects people's lives on a concrete level. What it does to them, like, emotionally, how it affects their relationships, how something as simple as, like, migration or crossing a border can completely change the relationship you have with your parents, the relationship you have with language, completely change the way you approach American culture. And that's something that, like, as much newspapers or, like, scholarly or whatever research or reading sociology doesn't always provide for you, like what the experience is growing up or migrating itself. So that's a lot of what art allows you to do, is understand it on a human level, and hopefully through that be able to empathize and, you know, help create stronger and better communities.
That was WFHB correspondent Jada Lucas speaking with Willie Palermo, Aubrey Sater, Paul Daly, and Kate Brown about their upcoming Ivy Tech John Waldron Art Center storytelling series on November 3rd.
Support for WFHB and the Daily Local News comes from Smithville Fiber, a local provider of internet, voice, and TV service. now also offering home automation and security systems for homes and offices throughout South Central Indiana. More information on Smithville's home automation service is available at smithvillesecurity.com.
Coming up next, WFHB's weekly community resources segment, Everyday People.
Welcome to Everyday People, improving the lives of older adults and people with disabilities in Monroe County.
Everyday resources for everyday people. Connecting our community by sharing resources you need, want, and probably don't know about.
Today we have Elizabeth Rue with Personal Financial Services. Welcome, Elizabeth.
Hi.
So can you tell me a little bit about what you do?
I own Personal Financial Services, and we serve as guardian for the elderly and disabled. I also prepare taxes and offer things like payroll to keep me eating at night.
So what's a guardian specifically?
A guardian is court appointed. So when an individual of any age meets certain criteria, a doctor would certify them to be incompetent under Indiana state law, and a court would appoint someone to be their guardian, and that person then is responsible for making healthcare decisions and being in charge of their finances, you know, keeping them going on all of their benefits, things like that.
So we had talked a little bit about Medicaid waiver, and I don't think a lot of people realize what that is. Can you touch a little bit about that?
Sure. There are different types of waiver. Probably the most common for the elderly population is the aged and disabled waiver, which is managed by the Area on Aging throughout the state. Ours is Area 10. There's also a Bureau of Developmental Disabilities waiver, which is designed for people who have a developmental disability, which means something before the age of 21. That both waivers provide services in the form of home health care and other community supports to keep a person as independent as possible and in their home. There's also a traumatic brain injury waiver specific for people who have experienced a TBI.
We had mentioned bed bugs earlier before we started recording. Is there a waiver for that too? Does that fall under one of
these?
The
A&D waiver can pay for things like pest control, including the bed bug treatment. It gets sticky because if they're renting, it's up to the landlord how it's treated and who they get to use. And then there's a certain dollar amount. And I think it's just once a year that they'll do it. So if you have someone who is having extreme difficulty getting cleaned up from it, that can be more of an issue. But there's still creative ways around it because, like, the township trustee will help you pay for rent or utilities if you get behind. So if you use that money for bed bug treatment instead, then you can go to the trustee and get that paid for. But that's also, you have to be mindful if you're on supplemental Social Security income, welfare version of Social Security, that you can't use that route because then the trustee will take their money back from Social Security.
Sure. Wow. So there's a lot of little intricate webs in there.
They also, the BEADS waiver will pay for home modifications. So if you need a new bathroom to accommodate whatever your disability is, then the BEADS waiver will pay for that. I'm not sure that the A&D waiver will.
That's amazing. So can someone be on an A&D waiver and potentially get the home modifications? Or they would have to qualify for the BEADS as well?
I know the BEADS waiver does. I am not asked about the A&D waiver in a while. I know that Area 10 has a kind of volunteer program to help with that anyway. So I'm thinking that the A&D waiver does not.
Which is pretty phenomenal. I was getting a key made at Lowe's, and one of the gentlemen, we were just talking, and he told me he was one of the volunteers for that, which I thought was really neat. Yeah. So that's pretty cool. Is there anything else you would like to touch on? How about how we could contact you if we need services?
Sure. My phone number is 812-822-2119, and website is personalfinancialservices.net.
Great. Thank you so much, Elizabeth.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us on Everyday People. Tune in next week for more information and resources that connect everyday people to everyday resources. For WFHB, I'm Courtney Stewart.
And I'm Stacey Goffinet.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Wes Martin, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Sarah Vaughn.
Everyday People is produced by Courtney Stewart and Stacey Goffinet. Our engineer is Jim Thrasher. Our theme music is provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Wes Martin. For WFHB, I'm Erin Wager-Miller.
And I'm Don Guerra. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast, as well as all other WFHB news programming, online at WFHB.org.
You can be part of our award-winning news team. For more information about joining our volunteer team of citizen journalists, email news at WFHB.org.
If you use iTunes, you can have this show delivered directly to you. Just go to the iTunes store, search for WFHB Daily Local News, and subscribe to our podcast.
Stay tuned for Interchange, Bloomington Community Radio's longest-running public affairs program, coming up next on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.